Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. That was the bend he just went around. That was the deep end he just went off. And those were his marbles he just lost. 2:49 p.m. Eastern Dementia Time. Quote, I'm not running to terminate the ACA as Crooked Joe Budin disinformates and misinformates all the time. I'm running to close the border, etc. There is no such word as disinformate. There is no such word as misinformate. There is a Joe Budin, but he is not president. He is a freelance finance specialist from the city of Soddy Daisy, Tennessee. And when the name Soddy Daisy, Tennessee is the one correct verb or proper noun in this sorry situation, the facts are undeniable. Donald Trump is not even close to still being all there. It is impossible to say which moment of Trump insanity, of his broken beanhood, is the worst. Could have been comparing himself to Christ, could have been repeatedly mistaking Obama and Biden for one another and then saying he meant to do that, could be getting the year wrong, or abandoning tough words in mid-syllable. But this one, Budin, misinformate, disinformate, that has got to be top 10 at least, because he wasn't finished. Trump added he wants to, quote, make the ACA or Obamacare, as it is known, much better, stronger, and far less expensive. In other words, make the ACA much, much, much better for far less money or cost. Those aren't other words. Those are the same words, Don. If a relative of yours started doing stuff like this on a daily basis, you would have them committed, or at least treated. It is impossible to say that he cannot possibly last this way, what with the forces of aphasia and dementia and narcissism and head injury and whatever else there is pulling him apart. But of course, he has lasted in approximately this same space for months now. And in spaces not really that much better than this one for years now, and decades now, and if the early anecdotes are correct, for a lifetime now. Still, inventing your own words is a sign of a dozen different physical problems, to say nothing of psychological ones like bipolarity and environmental ones like huffing decon roach room fogger. Joe Budin. B-U-D-E-N. Who is misinformating the populace. But no, Trump, you're right. Trump is the vigorous, alert one. Maybe he meant platformate. He meant platformate, not misinformate. Platformate, the additive that Shell used to put in its gasoline in the 1960s that made it... I don't remember what it did. Maybe it burned the atmosphere faster. Maybe Don used to huff that stuff. And of course, Trump still does, or seems to, plan and accomplish complicated, even intricate schemes like this adroit little move in the Stormy Daniels hush money and election suppression case yesterday. It is supposed to start with jury selection 2 weeks from Monday. Trump's goal in all of his cases is to stall. So yesterday morning, he attacked the daughter of the judge, Juan Merchan, online, claiming she worked at a company that works for Congressman Adam Schiff. And within hours, Judge Merchan hit him with a gag order, preventing him from talking about witnesses and attorneys and court staff and their families. Given that Trump did not immediately rail against that gag order, there is reason to speculate that he did this deliberately to get that gag order. Merchan gags Trump. Trump appeals the gag order. The judge rejects the appeal. Trump goes to an appellate court. And before you can say misinformate, that April 15th trial start date is on ice until the appeal is heard. Or he didn't plan it. And those are his toys in his attic, as they say. Stasis in the other Trump trials, but his co-defendant in Georgia, who put the speed bump in the case of the Trump 17, may be in more trouble elsewhere. Michael Roman, the former Trump campaign aide, has reportedly been subpoenaed as part of the burgeoning investigation into the fake Trump electors in Arizona. This is according to ABC News, which previously reported that Kenny the Cheese, Kenneth Chesbro, was already interviewed by the state attorney general there, who was going for some indictments in Arizona. Quoting Chris Mays, "We will announce something in the relatively near future." Well, you can't argue with that. In Trump legal adjacent news, guess who propped up the Trump-humping propaganda channel Newsmax right in the middle of Trump's occupation of the White House? A member of the royal family of Qatar, according to the Washington Post. 2019 and 2020, this was. $50 million into Newsmax. Not just to make sure there was good Trump coverage, mind you. The Qataris also wanted better pub for themselves during a squabble in the Middle East over who supported terrorist groups and who didn't. The Qataris are not particularly particular, nor especially smart about American television. They are the ones who bought the old scam I worked for, Current TV, then sued its chief ass clown, Joel Hyatt, the guy on whom the villain in the movie Philadelphia was in part based. And then, ultimately, they just shut the damn thing down, because what's $50 million to these guys? And lastly, this is where Trump is at the moment. Talk about misinformate and disinformate. He is now selling Trump Bibles. Bible? Holy Bible? Well, Trump endorsed Bibles. He did a 3-minute infomercial for it, or maybe that's a misinformate infomercial. It's actually a Lee Greenwood Bible with the lyrics of God Bless the USA added in, along with, it notes, the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, even though don't tell them the Bill of Rights is already in the Constitution. Your cost? Just $59.99. For a Bible. No evidence Trump claims to have written the Bible. Then again, he really did compare himself to Christ on Monday, so who knows what's next? With the pitch, Trump added this completely authentic, "Tell me you know nothing of the story of Christ without telling me you know nothing of the story of Christ" line. Quote, "Happy Holy Week!" Because, of course, the first emotion that comes with the whole crucifixion business, that first emotion is happy, happy, joy, joy. Meanwhile, the worst personnel fiasco at NBC News in nearly 3 months is finally over. NBC News chairman Cesar Conde fired former RNC chair and now eternal punchline Ronna McDaniel at 6:01 Eastern last night, according to the memo. "Hey, all," Conde's memo begins, and in so doing, it and he tells you all you need to know about the state of decay at NBC. Might as well have started it, "To all you little people out there." I'll read the memo and annotate it and translate it as we go on. Quote, "Hey, all. There is no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group after listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you," unquote, "especially the 237 of you who said something on the air." Resuming the quote, "I have decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. No organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned," unquote. And we're still trying here in year 29 of MSNBC, and we haven't quite gotten it straight yet, I know. What the hell? Quoting again, "Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team," unquote. That's Chairman Caesar's hint to Rebecca Blumenstein and Carrie Budoff-Brown and Rashida Jones to update their resumes before they get locked out of their computers. Again, quoting, "While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility for it," unquote. And to use the line of the great comedian and Nixon impersonator David Fry, "As the man in charge, I, of course, accept full responsibility, but not the blame. Let me explain the difference. People who are to blame lose their jobs. People who are responsible do not." Quoting yet again, "Our initial decision was made because of our deep commitment to presenting our audiences with a widely diverse set of viewpoints and experiences, particularly during these consequential times," unquote. Yeah, we like to have both people who are lying and people who are not lying on our newscasts. More quotes. "We continue to be committed to the principle that we must have diverse viewpoints on our programs, and to that end, we will redouble our efforts to seek voices that represent different parts of the political spectrum," unquote. Translation, this is your big chance, Nick Fuentes. Quoting one last bit, "Take care, Cesar," unquote. Yes, the backlash against the world's worst television news hire since Bo Dietl was so great that even NBC News chairman Cesar Conde noticed. Just to rub this in, the New York Times reports that CAA, the talent agency that got McDaniel her $300,000 a year, well, a day deal with the Peacock, and had handled her bargaining with ABC and CNN, and aren't they glad they finished second and third? CAA has also dropped McDaniel as a client. The Times says McDaniel is, quote, interviewing attorneys to engage with NBC on her behalf, which would seem to imply that Cesar Conde is trying to somehow get out from under the $300K NBC offered her, and to which offer she said yes, and to which contract they wrote their names. I have absolutely no respect for, nor interest in, Ronna Romney McDaniel, but she didn't do anything contractually wrong here. It's not like she didn't tell them she used to be chair of the RNC or that she had a role in trying to overthrow democracy. Trump campaign, one can imagine an NBC attorney saying, we thought that part of your resume read Anchor News 12 Brooklyn. NBC has no grounds for firing McDaniel for cause, which would mean they wouldn't have to pay her, nor would one think it would want to again poke its collective head into the collective hornet's nest by trying to get out from under the price it agreed to. Of course, that's what I would have said a week ago if you had asked me if even Cesar Conde would be stupid enough to hire Ronna frickin' McDaniel. It's equally true that she has no action against them, despite bleatings from the likes of nitwits like Hugh Hewitt about emotional distress and reputational damage. She was merely an insurrectionist once, but now she has to live with the terrible trauma of being a former NBC employee. Oh, noes. With the rarest of exceptions, TV contracts all include one primary clause, pay or play. Which means as long as the company pays you, it does not have to play you. I had that deal for 8 months at Fox in the year 2001. Greatest goddamn job I ever had. So now she belongs to the ages. 5 days at NBC News. And true, she was only on for one show, but she was still with NBC News after the first commercial break. So she did not earn the honor of being the quickest thing ever canceled by a major American TV network. That honor remains, and it is seemingly unbeatable, in the hands of the ABC network's surrealist comedy sketch show called Turn On, which premiered on Wednesday, February 5th, 1969 at 8:30 p.m. Eastern and was canceled on Wednesday, February 5th, 1969 at 8:40 p.m. Eastern. Just as the first commercial break began, the ABC station in Cleveland did not even let the show come back from that break, and some stations on the West Coast did not show any of it. I mean, even Ronna got to 20 minutes. Anyway, out of the TV weeds and back into the charred remains of NBC News, burned to the ground during her epic 5 days, or four commercial breaks, or the equivalent of three turn-ons, or whichever yardstick you want to use. The point of all this, and perhaps the value of this internal rebellion, is that maybe the somnambulant American political media, especially the American television political media, has awakened from its naive stupor. The crap that Chris Licht got away with for a year running CNN, sacking liberal reporters, sabotaging Don Lemon, putting Trump on live, fighting to air Republican debates, both sidesing everything he could get his hands on, was not some sort of aberration. And it didn't just happen at CNN. And it was not some sort of extreme. I have been saying here for the 18-month life of this podcast that every news organization in this country has had the same meeting. What do we do if Trump regains power? Not what you would hope they would be asking. Not what do we do journalistically or what do we do to save the nation, but what do we do to protect our phony baloney jobs? And our profits. And what do we do so when Trump starts jailing reporters and TV executives, he'll leave us alone? Or more realistically, he'll let us become one of his authorized propaganda channels. The entirety of that guy Licht's career at CNN and the bidding among CNN and ABC, and aren't they glad they finished second and third? Thank God, thank Jesus, thank Allah, thank anybody you can think of. And the bidding among CNN and ABC and NBC for Ronna McDaniel, it all underscores the reality that in the minds of its owners and its executives, its legions of hot and cold running Cesar Condes, television news is not a kind of news. It's a kind of television. It is designed to fill the places between the commercials. If it serves some kind of public purpose, hey, great. As long as that doesn't mean we have to go too many hours canceling all those advertisements just because some Pope died or something. Putting Trump on and taking Mehdi Hasan off and hiring Ronna McDaniel was inoculation. Nothing more, nothing less. It was proving to Trump and the MAGAs that while, no, we in the media, we are not shuttering MSNBC and sending Rachel Maddow to Alaska, and we're not in favor of this whole end the peaceful transfer of power thing and fascism is the new democracy stuff, but hey, go on. We're listening. Even most of the protests from within NBC and MSNBC completely missed that point. Chuck Todd was the first to get mad. Not on behalf of America, but on behalf of Kristen Welker. The pathetic, "I hope you'll reconsider," from first Joe Scarborough and then Rachel Maddow, was the 21st century equivalent of Oliver Twist saying, "Please, sir, I want some more." Maddow has the power to veto any hire at MSNBC, and she's used it. Trust me, I know. She could have stopped this last Friday. Me or her, you pick. You have my number. Hell, even I did that. Ronna McDaniel, the NBC publicists would have said, No. We wrote Roddy McDowell. Goddamned spell check again. I mean, those tortured rationales were kind of summed up by Lawrence O'Donnell, who decided to play, "Hey, you kids, get off my lawn," and promptly got all the facts wrong while he did it. O'Donnell decided this had happened not because he has worked for and genuflected in front of amoral corporate NBC humanoids since 1996, but because they were all so young and innocent that they didn't know how real TV newsmen would have handled Ronna McDaniel and the other members of the Trump gang. They wouldn't have done what they did after Watergate when Walter and Chet and David and Harry Reasoner refused to hire all the president's men, never gave any of them a dime, never gave any of them the cloak of television respectability. Like that's a real thing. Especially not that evil, jailed Watergate mastermind John Dean, who never went to jail, only to witness protection because of all the death threats, because he was the one who did the right thing, and he was the one who sank Nixon, and you smeared him, Lawrence. And who, by the way, by 1999 was being paid by MSNBC, Lawrence, to sit next to Brian Williams during the Bill Clinton impeachment. There's an easy way to avoid the controversy NBC News has stumbled into, Lawrence O'Donnell said. Don't hire anyone close to the crimes. That's what happened to the Nixon gang. He said that Tuesday night, and he could not have been more wrong as he said it. John Dean was on with me on MS in 1998. On my original show, I also had to interview John Ehrlichman and Robert Bork. Robert Bork, who fired the special counsel, who fired Archibald Cox, when the three guys ahead of him quit rather than do it. Robert freaking Bork was an analyst on MSNBC in 1998 during the Clinton impeachment. I can't remember if Ehrlichman and Bork were paid or not. I do remember when John Dean, a genuine American hero, came out against Clinton's impeachment on my show one night. The word went out at MSNBC that if we booked him again, we also had to book a different Watergate figure for the same show, a Watergate figure who was in favor of Clinton's impeachment. We had Gordon Liddy on, They wanted Gordon Liddy to do his own show. I mean, eventually they had Oliver North from a different scandal do his own shows, anchoring his own shows on MSNBC. I mean, hell, Pat Buchanan testified in Nixon's defense at the Senate Watergate hearings, and when CNN went on in 1980, so did Pat Buchanan's show. It was called Crossfire. Pat Buchanan was on cable TV continuously from 1980 until at least 2010. He was on so long, he wound up being Maddow's regular foil, paid by MSNBC. But nobody in our good old days ever hired anyone close to the crimes. I mean, Gordon goddamn put your hand over the flame Liddy had his own radio show in Washington for 25 years. And sure, nobody would touch John Ehrlichman, Lawrence. Except in 1987, 15 years after the Watergate break-in, when Ehrlichman was hired to do commercials for Dreyer's ice cream, part of a crazy ad campaign called Unbelievable Spokespeople for an Unbelievable Product. Dreyer's ice cream had commercials featuring a woman who said she'd encountered many UFOs, and the guy who faked the last will and testament of Howard Hughes, and some kid who kept getting blamed for everything, and the consumer blowback was so bad that they kept the Howard Hughes forger and the UFO lady, and they fired John Ehrlichman from the ice cream commercials. But go on, Lawrence. Okay, enough of this sub-rant about Lawrence O'Donnell, which I will resume at the end of this podcast. Back to the point. American TV news is not going to save us from creeping fascism. But maybe, the scattered, largely self-absorbed and selfish, righteous, kinda righteous indignation at NBC, maybe it means American TV news will stop helping fascism creep faster. Guardrail? Hell no. Spike strips scattered across democracy's highways? Well, maybe we could stop doing that, I guess. Hope that's good enough. Does that mean we can't hire Rudy Giuliani to anchor at 4 o'clock with Katie? So, ultimately, in a perverse way, thank you, Ronna McDaniel. You may have helped in ways you'll never be smart enough to understand. You helped me, Ronna. Helped me, Ronna. Help me, help me, help me, Ronna? Help me, Ronna. Wait a minute. Oh, Nancy!
Cesar Conde, say Cesar Conde, hired Ronna, hired Ronna, got yelled at by Maddow, she's the boss, so that was the death blow. Help me, Ronna, get the F off my TV. Thank you, Nancy Faust, for me and all my brothers.
Also of interest here, I will tell all those O'Donnell stories, like when he guest-hosted Countdown, and while I was out for a few weeks, he tried to get me fired so he could take over the show, and when that didn't work, he just stole a couple of the producers instead and got his own show. Oh, by the way, I was out for a couple of weeks because my dad was dying at the time. Also, you know why that bridge collapsed in Baltimore? Hit by a freighter? You naive fool. It was DEI and open borders, and it was to distract you from Kate Middleton's body double. That's next. This is Countdown.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Of us on this edition of Countdown, since he's in the news for completely butchering the story of the post-Watergate TV careers of all the Watergate figures, let me, as promised, detail for you how much of a jackass Lawrence O'Donnell is. Tried to steal my show, did steal my producers, sent a personal letter of mine to Ann Coulter so she could write a column about it. Just an A1 schmuck. In things I promised not to Well, the title doesn't hold up here. I promised to tell this, and I live up to my promises. Next. First, still more idiots to talk about. The daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. First, the bronze, the worst. Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee making the list for the second time in 3 episodes, which is a rare accomplishment, and I'm sure he's very proud of it, and he will send out a fundraising email off of it. After the shooting at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl victory parade this year, Mr. Burchett, who is that rare combination of having absolute confidence in his judgment while having absolutely no judgment, posted a picture of a man named Denton Loudermill Jr., on his Twitter X account, and Burchett wrote that this was, quote, one of the Kansas City Chiefs' victory parade shooters, unquote, and he added, quote, an illegal alien, unquote. Couple problems here. Mr. Loudermill isn't an alien, is not an illegal alien, has never been either of those things, and he wasn't a shooter, nor was he charged with anything. He was handcuffed as police closed off the area near the shooting, and he happened to get photographed during that brief period, and that was it. Mr. Loudermill was, in fact, a victim. Congressman Burchett's smearing of Mr. Loudermill was reposted more than 21,000 times on Elon Musk's Hell site, and it had 7 million views in the first 3 days. It is still not clear that the congressman understands what he did because he's a bonehead, but after the lawsuit, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Mr. Burchett will understand what he did. The runner-up, worser, Ari Fleischer, who is, well, actually, he hasn't had an actual job since he quit as George W. Bush's White House press secretary on the 15th of July, 2003, though he has been a consultant to the Saudi Live Bonesaw Golf League. Yesterday, Ari Fleischer slammed President Biden's foreign policy record in a tweet, complaining that he had, quote, opposed the first Gulf War, supported the second Gulf War. Ari, the second Gulf War, that was yours. That was Bush's. That was the one Ari Fleischer spent part of 2001, all of 2002, the first half of 2003, selling to the American public, even though nearly everything that he and Bush and Dick Cheney and Colin Powell and Fox propaganda and everybody in the government and everybody in the Republican Party, everything they said about the second Gulf War was completely untrue, including that little issue of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and any connection whatsoever between Saddam Hussein and 9/11. And suddenly, Ari Fleischer is criticizing Biden for, I guess, believing that a president would never lie about something as important as whether or not this country should attack a foreign nation and precipitate a war in which we would be fully involved for nearly a decade and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians would die. And I guess Ari Fleischer is critical of Biden for assuming a presidential press secretary would also never lie to the American public, to the world, about something so important, especially when the second Gulf War press secretary was Ari Fleischer. But I'm burying the lead here, I guess. Headline: Ari Fleischer is now critical of people who supported George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq. But our winners, the worst. Let's see, it's quite a list. There's Congresswoman Nancy Mace, Maria Bartiromo of Fox, Florida congressional candidate David Sabatini, Matt Newentown fella Schlapp, Glenn Thrush of the New York Times, and Rose Graham. As you know, early yesterday morning, a freighter the size of an aircraft carrier rammed the Francis Scott Key Bridge over the harbor in Baltimore and collapsed it. The bridge did not have structural problems. It wasn't part of any infrastructure crisis. Systems did not fail. As it approached one of the supports of the bridge, the ship had a total power failure, yet the crew managed to get a Mayday signal out in time for police to seal the entrances so that nobody else got onto it. They only had 90 seconds to do that. They saved lives. Eight people were missing initially, two recovered, one uninjured. Eight. On the far right, though, the bridge disaster, and actually it's the freighter disaster, is a reason to, I don't know, declare martial law. Congresswoman Mace, who is an idiot, immediately blamed it on the Biden infrastructure bill, which she was last seen taking credit for the Biden infrastructure bill. Maria Bartiromo, a Trump PR person who was once actually somehow mistaken for an NBC journalist, blamed it on the wide open border. That's in English, the wide open border. Anthony Sabatini, another Trump nut job, tweeted, DEI did this. Matt Schlapp went on Newsmax and blamed it on COVID lockdowns and drug-addled employees, which sounds more like an accurate description of his CPAC organization, doesn't it? Glenn Thrush of the Times tweeted a series of questions, including, is any bridge supposed to just fall down after a single impact, however big? This is a news reporter. At least half a dozen bridges hit by objects as small as a tugboat have collapsed in this country just since 1967, and each of them resulted in at least 35 deaths. The 2007 Minnesota bridge collapsed without being hit by anything. And then there's Rose Graham, a seemingly random tweeter who has nearly 5,000 followers, seems to be from Arkansas. And she wrote what so many of the conspiracy thumpers wrote yesterday. Quote, Puff Daddy gets raided and the Baltimore Bridge collapses. And just like that, people are becoming no longer interested in Kate Middleton. It's always several things going on at once to keep you busy. Trust nothing and no one. Unquote. Because it's all a plot to, I'm not sure which part of it she thinks is the plot, but trust no one. Except her. This was an accident. It was the shipping line's fault. They will ultimately pay for it. There is reason to question whether such large watercraft should be allowed on inland waterways without tugs escorting them. But otherwise, there was not much to prevent this from happening. And yet there are people today who will die peacefully in their beds 80 years from now, remaining convinced that the Baltimore Bridge collapse of 2024 happened because of drug-addled DEI riding the infrastructure bill in through wide open borders, and it was all just a distraction from Kate Middleton, and accidents are illegal, aren't they? Thanks to Congresswoman Nancy Mace, Maria Bartiromo Fox, Florida congressional candidate David Sabatini, Matt Newintown Fella Schlapp, Glenn Thrush of the New York Times, and Rose Graham Rando, who don't know what they're talking about, but that didn't faze them in the least, and who are today's worst persons in the world, Kate Middleton, for God's sake!
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I wanted to tell you about Bloomberg's flagship podcast. It's called The Big Take, and it should be part of your daily routine. The Big Take brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and most informed business reporters around the world. Hosts David Gura, Sarah Holder, and Saleha Mohsin bring you the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. Now, look, David Gura went to Cornell, and he majored in history there. And as near as I've been able to find out with my research, he got good grades. So a lot of people recommend podcasts to you without any kind of frame of reference. And I'm telling you, this guy survived 4 winters in Ithaca, New York, like I did. So if he says he can help you understand what's happening, this is tested by snow and cold. You can listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now to the number one story on the countdown and my favorite topic, me and things I promised not to tell. Early on the afternoon of Monday, May 23rd, 2016, I bounced out of my New York City apartment building, began to walk past the tourist trap brunch spot in the lobby, and froze. There, at one of the cramped outdoor tables, staring up at me in blank surprise that must have matched my own staring down at him in blank surprise, was Lawrence O'Donnell. I decided to go silly. "Hey, get out of my house." He laughed. I laughed. It didn't seem forced. He introduced me to his companion, his daughter. "This, my dear, is Keith Olbermann. Keith started us all at MSNBC, and then he left, and..." And here Lawrence gave one of his long pauses, and we crashed it. I wanted to be generous. I started to politely contradict him, and I just couldn't do it. Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, about 30 seconds of courteous nothingness followed, and I wished the O'Donnells well, and then I left. It was the most pleasant experience I ever had with Lawrence O'Donnell. In fact, it might have been the only pleasant experience I ever had with Lawrence O'Donnell. After I finally convinced and bullied and blackmailed MSNBC management into letting Rachel Maddow become the regular guest host for my show, and she aced it, and then rightly got her own show, and she aced that, and became a star, I went looking for a new guest host. My first idea was a frequent guest we had named Chris Hayes. I didn't get far. Management had its own idea, and my input was not required. They wanted former Vermont governor and Democratic presidential hopeful Howard Dean. And Howard is a really smart guy and great on TV, but Howard had a bit of a teleprompter problem. One of my producers swears that Howard once read, "Good evening, I'm Howard. Dean, former governor of Vermont, this is Countdown." I do know whatever he did on the air, it was bad enough that one week, when I was off and at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and a baseball news story broke and he was filling in for me, my producers called me there and asked me to come on from the streets of Cooperstown and be a guest on my own show just to help Howard Dean out. Anyway, their next idea was a guy who had been kicking around MSNBC since its founding in 1996. Lawrence O'Donnell was one of the original MSNBC friends. The MSNBC friends. Political pundits who sat on clear stools at a clear table or in a set designed to look like a booth at a coffee shop. No, I'm not making this up. Among the friends were Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham, if you can believe it. Once or twice an hour, the rather CNN-like all-news coverage on MSNBC in its first couple of years would pause, and three or more of these friends would appear, chew over the MSNBC headlines, and then disappear. Lawrence O'Donnell was one of the friends. It was as bad as it sounds. Then Lawrence O'Donnell pretty much disappeared. You would see him on MSNBC as a guest every once in a while, but mostly he pursued his acting and producing career. He played President Bartlett's father on The West Wing, the one who beat him throughout college. Lawrence was very convincing. And then around 2008, we started getting pressure to bring him in as a guest on Countdown, like once a week or twice a week. I was not sure what that was all about, but he had been a Senate staffer, and he knew the health care debate and other wonky stuff pretty well, so I gave my assent for whatever that was worth. Not long after that, Lawrence came into my office. He really needed my support, he said, to get him more involved in MSNBC. He knew I had gone to bat for Rachel, and before her, I'd gone to bat for Tom Brokaw, and for people like Chuck Todd and Chris Hayes and others who are now getting steady incomes from NBC. I don't remember his argument on his own behalf. I do remember I didn't have much of a reason to say no, and he wasn't asking me to do a lot, so I said yes. The next thing I knew, I was reading a memo announcing that Lawrence O'Donnell had been appointed as the new full-time guest host of Countdown. This was in the winter of 2009-2010, when my late dad was fighting so valiantly to stay alive after colon cancer and, more importantly, a series of infections. Dad had the immune system of an alien. The average white cell count in a healthy adult is between 4,000 and 11,000. One night, Dad's was at 33,000. And the doctors told me to prepare to make the call to let him go. They had one antibiotic left to try on him. The next morning, Dad's white cell count, which had been 33,000, was 8,000. Onward he fought. Unfortunately, he was 80 years old, and he had not exercised since Harry Truman was president, and eventually he ran out of Houdini tricks. I had been visiting him twice a day for 6 months while still doing Countdown and the NBC Sunday Night Football show, but now, as it hit late February of 2010, his bright days became fewer and farther in between, and the hope that was propelling me to keep being his full-time caregiver and Countdown's full-time host both began to fade. In the last 2 weeks of my dad's life, as the doctors tried all the long-shot things, I asked MSNBC for a leave of absence. Finally, the inevitability became inarguable, and we let Dad go on Saturday, March 13, 2010. My sister held his hand, and I read him his favorite Thurber story, and as soon as I finished it, he exhaled deeply and peacefully, and he died. I think I took another week off, maybe two, and I vaguely recall emails from friends at Countdown that I may have paid passing attention to, but I really didn't. Most of the staff, including people who came up from Washington, like Howard Fineman or Gene Robinson of the Washington Post, always friends to me. They attended my dad's memorial service. I believe Lawrence O'Donnell, who was, of course, filling in for me on Countdown, was there too, but maybe not. I do not remember. And then came the day when I went back to the office full time and my assistant grabbed me. Both hands on my wrist. "You did not answer my emails," she said with a fervency she rarely exhibited. "For God's sake, do not ever leave me alone with Lawrence O'Donnell again." I snapped back to attention. Had he, you know, bothered her? "Not that way," she said, "but he's a son of a bitch. He treats me and everybody who isn't a producer here like dirt. And since you didn't read my emails, I just have to tell you this. He's trying to get you fired so he can take over Countdown. And if you think he's nuts, one of your senior producers is in on it too, with him." I have to admit, even now, of all the things I went through at that very, very strange place, MSNBC, even now, this story still shocks me. The senior producers of Countdown consisted of a guy who'd been a producer who booked satellite transmissions for MSNBC until I asked that he be promoted, and one was a guest booker for the daytime shows until I asked that she be promoted. Another was a line producer who was well-regarded only for his ability to time a show until I asked for him to be promoted. And then there was the old friend of mine who had been blown out of ESPN in a sexual harassment porn link email scandal and was headed back to college to start his career all over again until I asked that he be hired and then promoted. I did some digging, and I was going to confront O'Donnell about it when somebody told me he had tweeted something negative about me and about Countdown. So I got a hold of him, and I said this did not seem to be in keeping with MSNBC traditions and rules, you know, the ones about not peeing inside the tent. And he said, "What do you know about MSNBC traditions? I've been here since 1996. I never left and came back." So I went to my boss, the president of the network, Phil Griffin, the one who would not hire Rachel Maddow, and before I could say they'd have to get rid of him, Griffin said it was all academic. They were preparing the press release as we spoke for Lawrence's new show at 10 o'clock called The Last Word, and oh, by the way, Keith, two of your senior producers are going with him to run his show. If this sounds vaguely familiar to you, it is the plot of the pilot for the old Aaron Sorkin HBO series Newsroom. I was still friendly with Aaron then, so he actually asked, as I related this to him in real time, in emails and phone calls, he asked if he could use it in the plot rather than just what he often did, which was to use it without asking. The problem was, none of this made any sense in the real world, although it made a pretty good pilot for Aaron Sorkin. In going into the 10 p.m. slot, Lawrence O'Donnell would be replacing a rerun of Countdown. And even if O'Donnell did much better in the ratings, much, much better, there was no way it could ever make enough money to make the move make sense. O'Donnell's new show would necessarily cost MSNBC between $10 and $15 million to produce every year. Didn't have anything to do with him. That was the cost. The Countdown rerun cost not $10, $15 million a year. It count however much they paid the guy who pushed the play button that fired up the videotape of the Countdown replay. Amortized. Later that day, a sympathetic NBC executive called me up and explained the move to me. First, Griffin was convinced O'Donnell was about to leave us and sign with CNN. I said, well, that's a good idea for everybody involved except CNN. Turned out CNN had not even talked to him, but Griffin did not know that. More importantly, Comcast had already finalized its agreement to buy NBC effective the following January. And as part of the deal, they were entitled to review what all the executives in the company had done. And they had already looked at MSNBC president Phil Griffin and discovered he had never done anything. In panic, Griffin told colleagues he had to launch a new show of his own immediately. This is the series Aaron Sorkin should have made. As to the producers who left my show to go with O'Donnell while my father was dying, one of them told me a couple of years after she left MSNBC for the last time, every day when I went into that last word office, I realized you were getting your revenge on me without even having to lift a finger. Lots of people I've worked with, probably a majority of people I've helped, have behaved like Lawrence O'Donnell, because remember, it's television, it is a mental illness. The comparatively healthy people are the ones who acknowledge it's a mental illness. But Lawrence O'Donnell was something special. A year before my dad died, almost to the day, in fact, I was in Los Angeles appearing on Bill Maher's show. And one of the other guests that night was the actress Kerry Washington. She was very nice to me, very sweet, a very big fan. And she asked to stay in touch. Sure enough, after my father died, after the memorial, after I was back at work, I had to go to his house for the first time since he had passed away. It was about as much fun as it sounds. In the car on the way back into New York City, the solemnity of it. Both my parents died within 11 months of each other. It really hit me, for some reason, for the first time, full force. And I was about to lose it when the car approached a billboard overlooking the West Side Highway in New York City. And whose big smiling face was on the ad on that billboard? Kerry Washington. And it flashed me right back to her kindness in L.A., and it helped me overcome this bump in my mourning. So I wanted to drop her a note. Nothing big. Nothing suggestive. I wasn't hinting at asking her out. Just, you never know how you might help somebody in a time of crisis. Thanks for letting me smile. That was the whole message. I asked my assistant to figure out how to get it to her, and that was the end of it. Except, a week later, the fact that I wrote her a note wound up in a column written by Ann Coulter. I was astonished. How? Why? Ann Coulter? It was her usual, the brain doesn't quite work right kind of stuff. She implied I was hitting on Kerry Washington and said how stupid I had to be to not realize she was involved with somebody, and on and on and on. No mention of my father's passing or the Maher show or the billboard or her smiling face. I went back to my assistant and I said, hey, what on earth did you do with that note to Kerry Washington? And she said, oh, I gave it to this Lawrence O'Donnell guy. And I said, good God, why did you do that? And she said, well, he's dating Kerry Washington. I thought you knew that. I thought that's why you asked me to get it to her. So it wasn't hard to figure out from there. Lawrence had called his old friend from the old MSNBC Friends of 1996, Ann Coulter, and told her about the note, inventing whatever motive his jealous little mind could dream up. It should have gotten him fired from NBC, but unfortunately his boss was just as much of a 14-year-old emotionally as he was. And meanwhile, I had decided to get out of MSNBC anyway when the time was ripe. As it turned out, it ripened in January of 2011. I've told that story in other episodes, like 60 of them. It's kind of complicated. And since nobody ever actually asked me why Countdown, the TV show, ended, I've probably got another 60 episodes worth of information about that. Anyway, In 2015, since repeatedly over the following 10 years, there were overtures by both sides to bring Countdown and me back to MSNBC. In 2015, during the World Series, in fact, the then president of NBC News, Andy Lack, asked me to come back and do a new show at MSNBC and move to Los Angeles and have a co-host, a conservative, and not do any commentaries. And actually, this new show was somehow less appealing than it sounds. But the punchline of all punchlines is contained in what Lack wanted to call my new 2015 MSNBC show that never was. It tells you all you really need to know about The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell and MSNBC and O'Donnell's place in TV history and its demise and the end of MSNBC. NBC News President Lack was brimming with enthusiasm about this name that he had come up with for my new show. "I've got the perfect title," Lack told me. "We're going to call it The Last Word with Keith Olbermann." And I didn't laugh or guffaw. I just said, "Andy, you have a show called The Last Word. The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell." Andy Lack now laughed. "Hopefully not for much longer, I don't." I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on the guitars, the bass, and the drums, and Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. Produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. That's a pun. See, it's all horns. No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. And yes, I did just kind of mispronounce my own name there, didn't I? Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend John Dean. Everything else, including the mispronunciation of my own name, was pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 224th day until the 2024 presidential election, and the 1,177th day since Dementia J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option. Use the Insurrection Act, the justice system, the mental health system to stop him from disinformating everybody and from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bulletins as the news warrants. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck.
Cesar Conde, say Cesar Conde, hired Rana, hired Rana, got yelled at by Maddow, she's the boss, so that was the death blow. Help me, Rana, get the F off my TV. Thank you, Nancy Faust, for me and all of my brothers.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.